no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. We begin this week with the Philip Morris Playhouse. We'll hear their story from April 1st, 1949, titled Apology. After that, it's The Doctor Fights and Mayor Island and Back, their story from June 19th, 1945.
Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Elliot Lewis. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to wake up fresh with no cigarette hangover. Yes, you'll be glad tomorrow you smoke Philip Morris today.
Call for Philip Morris!
And now, with Elliot Lewis as star, we bring you Apology. Tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
He could be anywhere down there. He could be in the lobby asking the room clerk. He could even be in the elevator or walking down the hall to my room. Maybe even... Who is it? Who is it?
Mr. Buzicki, it's the bellboy.
Just a minute. I was lying on the bed.
The clerk wants I should ask you if you're going to stay over the weekend because he wants to know because there's a Wisconsin party coming in which will take most of the rooms.
Well, I haven't made up my mind yet.
What could I tell a room clerk?
Tell him I haven't as yet made up my mind.
What can I tell him you'll tell him?
Tomorrow morning.
He'd like to know tonight.
I'll let him know tomorrow.
Check out his noon.
I know, there's a sign on the closet door.
Be surprised how few people ever read them signs.
I read them.
And good night.
Good night.
I'll tell him you'll tell him tomorrow.
Funny. How his just being so big scares me. Size wouldn't count. That's why it's foolish to worry about a thing like that. Because if he ever caught up with me, size wouldn't have a thing to do with it. Only the index finger on his right hand is off, with which he'd pull the trigger. Well, it's all psychological, I suppose. The mind has got to work, I guess. Funny how a man can have no courage, absolutely no courage at all, for one entire lifetime, and get reckless one day. Just something in him, maybe all the times he should have got angry and never did. And that day, that minute, that second, he does something. If anybody'd have asked me if I was planning a thing like that... Still, who can know himself? To see her lying there with the little wine glass in her hand when a minute, a second before, she was her usual self.
Montana!
What's wrong with that?
I wouldn't go to Montana if you carried me there dead.
What's wrong with Montana?
I'd rather be dead.
Is it such a terrible place?
I wouldn't know. I never been there.
Then how can you possibly know?
Do you think I haven't a very good idea of what you have in mind when you want to send me off like that?
Because I ask you to take a little vacation.
To imagine that a girl like that would say anything, would walk by, would even stay on the same side of the street as a small-time, small-timer like you is enough to make me laugh. This is an imagination.
Do you want to be sensible or lose your temper?
When I think of the way he tried to talk me out of it, the way Pa begged me, he got down on his hands and his knees and begged me, please, this fella is no good. I can hear his voice telling me. I was young.
Your Pa is not always infallible.
A person can be too young, you know that? Much too young. It's only later, when it's too late, that you think back and remember how right your father was when he told you.
Your Pa was wrong.
You can stand there and tell me that? when you have no idea in your head but shipping me off someplace I don't know where, so you can paint the town yellow with somebody that you couldn't even get a date with?
If I can't even get a date with her, what are you so worried about?
That's a real question. That's a real intelligent question.
Ida, if the doctor said Montana and you have confidence in him, why do we got to argue like that?
She wouldn't even look at you.
How do you know?
See? You admit it.
I want to know how you can hate me so much as to think she wouldn't be the slightest bit interested.
Because she wouldn't be interested.
What's interested you can interest her.
I was young.
This is so silly. We're talking in circles, Ida.
Oh.
What's the matter?
You aggravated me.
What is it?
My pills. Top shelf.
Lie down, here.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare touch
me. I'm not touching you. Lie down.
I'm as comfortable as I ever will be, right? Here. What are you standing there for?
Top shelf. Top shelf. I had saved them up, like everything inside me, in green capsules. I never intended. How could I have such a thing in my heart that I'd ever think of doing such a thing? But it always made me feel better when I'd make it up at the drugstore and put it in the box. I felt better when I got through work mixing the stuff, just like I mixed 1,000 prescriptions every day of the week and putting it away. For a rainy day, I told myself, someday when I got mad enough. Well, it wasn't my head or my heart, I can tell you that, but something my hand, maybe. And I took her the green capsules instead.
What are these?
Dr. Ross was in today and asked me to change her prescription.
Green?
What difference does the color make?
Never told me about a new medicine.
Would I make up anything for you that wouldn't be good for you?
If you'd send me to Montana.
Now, study yourself. Really now, Ida, study yourself. Be objective a little. You've got me murdering you now.
What does it taste like?
Capsules don't taste.
All right.
Here, I'll get my hand under your pillow.
Don't touch me. I'd rather die than have you touch me.
All right. See, I'm not touching you.
Green, I never heard of anything like it. Where's the water?
You make such a fuss over a little pill.
Never mind. Give me the glass.
You'll feel much better.
I could taste it.
You only think so.
I could. Myron, I feel funny again. Not like before. Funnier.
I'll get you water.
No. Let me.
I'll get it.
Glass. Water.
You'd think a man would feel guilty. After studying what such a chemical can do to a person's system, knowing the entire process, you'd think just a little regret, maybe, would pass through him. No. I was glad, that's all. I stood and looked down at her. I smiled. I felt evil. Humphrey Bogart. For a minute, I pretended I was him. I put my hand in my coat pocket. You know how he does, with just the thumb sticking out. No gun in there, actually. But you would swear he's got it. But be realistic. You can't hide a thing like that. First degree murder, and poof. So I put her in bed, I washed out the little wine glass, and I packed a few things. Can you imagine passing a policeman? They're not the same anymore. Instead of looking at the brass buttons, you're looking at the gun. But more than anything, I was afraid of him. He'd get me. If any man was violent, it was certainly her father. Take, for instance, like a few weeks after Ida and me were married.
Sit down.
I'd rather stand, thank you.
In my house, when I ask a man to sit down, I intend to have him sit down. Sit down. Much better.
Sit down yourself, why don't you?
I prefer to stand. To get the brass tacks, Ida tells me you quarrel.
Sometimes in the best of families.
Whose fault was it?
Well, Pa, you know her temper.
Never lost without reason. What did you do to her?
Nothing. Haven't you ever fought with your wife?
My differences with my wife have nothing whatever to do with your mistreating my daughter.
She must have really bent your ear.
Listen, you. I want you to know something. Look up at me. Now, you listen. I didn't want you to marry Ida. I told her about you. I see your kind every day. I don't know, maybe you look better behind the counter with a white uniform on talking to the doctors. But with or without the white uniform, I know you.
What did she tell you about me?
Never mind, I'm doing the talking.
I'll see.
I'm doing the talking is right. Ida isn't used to a home life of quarreling and bickering. We never did it here, and we don't intend that you should make of her a nervous wreck.
I don't know why I have to explain my family problems to you in the first place.
Listen to me, you. Put me down. Let go. I hold you at arm's length like the little piece of nothing you are, and I tell you, if I ever catch you treating my daughter as anything but the way a gentleman should treat her, I'll tear you in little bits. Do you think I can do it? Do you think I can do it?
I think you could.
Much better. Look, just remember, the little tiny bits.
Between him and the police, therefore, there's very little hope. Very little. As a matter of fact, it's hard to decide which would be the worst way to die, which I am more afraid of. Of course, Pa. Much more. The law has logic and a little reason to it, but Pa is nothing but an animal, a wild animal. If he should ever get me... I'll leave tonight. How can a fugitive from justice like me stay in one place? Because a man has an intolerable wife, he is a criminal. Think of the injustice. Think. If it were a war and she were the enemy, I would have a medal. Why haven't I the intestinal fortitude to run to the police and give myself up? Why? Because even with such a rotten place, cracked plaster and unsanitary, it's life. And the other? Death. Listen to the philosopher while they wait to kill me. I've got to get out of here. Nobody. Ooh, my bag. Yeah, maybe I should stay here. No, got to go. Never stay in one place too long.
Wait a minute, I'm not sure what you mean.
A little weasel, small, lying all the time. Have you seen him?
Tell me. I see this fella, yeah.
Well, show me. He's a murderer.
Show him.
In the lobby. He's in the lobby talking to the bellboy. What'll I do? What'll I do? Nothing. Nothing I can do.
Run, you fool.
Run. Where? The back stairs. Run. Run. Run.
You've heard Act One of Apology, starring Elliot Lewis. In this brief intermission for a smoke in the Philip Morris Playhouse, here is Mr. John Holbrook with some important facts well worth remembering, well worth acting on.
Over 2 million more smokers have switched to Philip Morris.
Yes, over 2 million more smokers are now enjoying in Philip Morris a milder smoke, a cleaner, fresher smoke than they've ever known before.
If you're tired of cigarette hangover, that stale, musty, smoked-out taste in your mouth,
join the millions and switch to Philip Morris.
If you're tired of cigarette hangover, that tight, dry feeling in your throat,
join the millions and switch to Philip Morris.
Remember, Philip Morris is the one, the only cigarette proved definitely less irritating, definitely milder than any other leading brand. No other cigarette can make that statement.
Remember, top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists, actually suggest Philip Morris in cases of irritation due to smoking.
And above all, remember this. You'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today.
Now, Elliot Lewis in Act Two of Apology. Tonight's production in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
This why I was born, so I could take my place behind a garbage can in an alley. Lord knows what diseases. And I didn't have sense enough to even bring my top coat when I left the house. But Pa, I lost him all right. The city should do something about alleys. Well, Do we sit here and talk to ourselves, or do we start looking for a place to go? Oh, there's a place to go. What a beautiful place. It's funny how a man frees himself from one thing and gets chained up in something else. It just wasn't meant to be that I should see her again. Do you know that there might be a chance to see her? Do you know that? Who but Ida knew I had interest in Anne? Not even Anne herself. Can you imagine being so much in love with a person and never so much as saying hello? Maybe if it were Hetty Lamar, a man isn't fit to touch the hem of a skirt, but a common, ordinary waitress. Wait a minute. Not so common, not so ordinary. I could go right to her place. Couldn't be more than a mile from here. Agreed. I followed her home so many times. A man who has the courage to kill certainly has the courage to talk to the girl he loves. How beautiful she is. And I've never been so much as 10 feet close to her. I never even smelled her perfume. A murderer should certainly have courage enough to have smelled her perfume. I'll knock. She'll open the door. I'll come in, close the door, put my back to it, my hand in my pocket, with the thumb out. That funny little look on my face. Smiling, maybe. I've killed my wife. Your life is nothing to me. The chair don't get any hotter for two murders than for one. Who's to tell what a girl is liable to do when she's afraid? Who's to tell how far fear is from love? Who's to tell? An emergency! Quick, open!
Who are you?
It's John of the restaurant. Please, Anne.
John?
Open! Open!
Hey, I don't know anybody.
Get back in there. I said get in. This is a gun.
What do you want?
Do you read the papers?
What do you want?
I ask you a question, and when I ask a question, I expect to be answered. Sit down. Much better. Now, do you read the papers? Turn on the lamp.
Sometimes.
I'm Myron Frayne, alias Buzicki. I killed my wife.
Look,
and do you know why?
Why?
Because I loved you.
What?
How does it feel to have someone killed over love of you?
Why, I
owned the drugstore next to the restaurant you work in.
Look, maybe I ought to go downstairs, get us something to drink. I'll be right back.
Sit down. Do you also know another reason I killed my wife? Because now that I'm a murderer, you'll talk to me.
What are you going to do?
Something I should have done a long time ago.
Please.
I'm going to kiss you. Or better, you will kiss me. Come here.
Kiss you?
A kiss or a bullet. Your choice.
All right. I'll kiss you.
Sure.
Okay. Sit up, right boy.
You?
Too many movies is your trouble.
No.
Killed your wife for me. A gun. I get a joker like you once a month. Always big stories.
And?
Miss Palmer. I remember you now. I've seen you follow me home a couple of times.
But I really did
kill... Yeah, now look. Look, I'm not calling the cops this time. It's just because I got a heart that's bigger than my head. You probably got some mare at home that bops you down daily. Go on. Get out of here. Go on. If I ever see you again, I'll personally beat your brains in. Judging by your size, it wouldn't be too hard to do.
Lose yourself in a crowd. Times Square. Lucky my face is so ordinary. I look no different than 50,000 others who are riding around in the subways. My description could fit so many people. They'll have a tough time. Ooh, what a terrible girl she was. What a terrible girl. So hard. Hard as steel. Ah, just like a lot of things, if you get up close, there's very little romance left. Her complexion isn't even what might be expected. Why should she believe me? A killer. Do I look the type? Of course not. After a period of respectability, a man can do anything and still appear respectable. It's a habit, more or less. Yeah. Being on a subway makes you think you're going somewhere, because a passenger who gets on when it's heading downtown doesn't realize that the train turns around and goes back uptown. He thinks it's going someplace, whereas it's only going in a circle.
Look out who you're... Well, hello, Mr. Frayne.
Who, me? Not me.
Why, Mr. Frayne, what are you talking, Mr. Frayne?
No, look, you, I've never been in New York before.
Your name, Frayne?
Buzicki.
Let's see your identification.
What is this?
Your identification, please.
I left my wallet at home.
Yeah. You come down with me.
A man has the right.
They charge. Murder. Your lawyer's here.
What? Mr. Lauritsen. Good to see you, Lauritsen.
Myron.
10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Myron, you didn't do this horrible thing.
Yes.
Temporary insanity. It's your only chance.
Maybe.
I'm friendly with a wonderful psychiatrist. He'll give you an examination.
I saved up the poison for weeks. You see how easily I admit it. It's because of the hate I felt for her.
Terrible, just terrible.
You don't know, Lawson, what it's been like these last few years.
Just terrible.
Coming home every night to such a woman.
Temporary insanity.
How can you say that? I saved up the poison for weeks.
Can they prove it?
They can prove I mixed it. I'm a registered pharmacist. Okay. They can prove it was premeditated.
Very bad, Myron. Very bad. I'm so sorry for
Listen
you.
To me, Lawson. Whatever you do, don't let that ogre come near me.
Who?
Pa, my father-in-law.
Oh.
He'll kill me.
Oh, I see. I can very well understand.
You won't permit him near me.
I'll caution the police.
He'll kill me.
I'll caution the police.
And don't let me out of here.
On a murder charge? How could I get you out?
Habeas corpus.
Oh, you always listen too much to radios. There's no bond on a murder charge.
Then he couldn't get me out of here by paying my bond.
Never in a million years.
Thank you, Lawson.
Now, I've got my notebook. Now, Myron, every detail. Don't hold back, Myron.
I know. Everything may be important in a case like this. Afraid? I was afraid since I was 1 year old. Maybe even before. But not now. Not anymore. Being afraid was the only protection I ever had. But now it's not up to me. Now somebody in authority will decide when I'm going to die in the duly appointed place.
Your lawyer again, Frayne.
What? Mr. Lawson, what?
Myron. Your father-in-law, a wonderful man.
What did he do?
A genius of a man. How he did it, I still don't know.
Did what?
The police examined everything, Myron. None of your fingerprints were on the box, none on the glass.
How could it be? I mixed the stuff.
It's used for some disease, isn't it?
The poison? In small quantity.
He has it. The disease. He said you mixed it for
him. Oh, but what about Ida? How?
It said poison, the label. She took it. He said she was despondent. Your father-in-law...
Oh, no, but don't they see? Don't they see? He went up there. He was the one that found her. Before he left, he made it look like it was suicide. So in case the police picked me up, I'd be released and he could get at me. Don't you see?
Regardless, he did it, and you're a fool if you open your mouth.
But with modern crime detection...
Listen, Myron, if you open your mouth, I'll refuse to take your case.
He'll kill me.
You crazy fool. You're free. Just shut up.
It'll be 10 times worse with him.
Go then. Get away from him. Leave the country. Do something. At least the law isn't after you.
I won't have a chance.
Remember what Lowitson said. Just shut up.
How can it be that I'm standing on a street again? Me, a murderer. It's a crime to public safety that I should be allowed to walk around. At Lowitson, just so they wouldn't say he lost a murder case. Just so... So...
Myron! Get in the car, Myron.
All right, Pa.
I'm very proud of myself.
You should be. It was remarkable.
I came up afterwards. She was lying there,
I started out. I almost collapsed right then and there. But I turned back. I knew you were stupid. I knew the law would pick you up, so I fixed everything. I covered all your traces. I'm very thorough, Myron. I never slip up when I set my mind.
The law should take care of me. You shouldn't.
That wouldn't be enough for me.
I would get the electric chair.
Too quick.
Please, please.
I can tend to everything sitting right here in the car.
Please, have a little mercy.
Yell for it.
Mercy. Mercy.
I'm very thorough, Myron. Very thorough indeed. Get up.
I can't.
Tell me now, Myron. What did she mean to me? Myron. What did she mean to me, Myron?
She meant everything.
To who?
Shoot me. Shoot me.
What else, Myron?
She was the joy.
The joy?
The joy of your life.
Now, apologize again.
I apologize.
What for?
She was everything to you.
That's true, Myron. She was everything to me. By the way, there's something you'll be happy to know. When I go back, I'll get Lowenstein to handle my case. Just to make sure there's one he loses.
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented Apology, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Our star, Elliot Lewis, will be back in a moment for a curtain call. In the meantime,
watch out, watch out, watch out for
cigarette hangover.
That stale, musty, smoked-out taste in your mouth.
Cigarette hangover.
That tight, dry, uncomfortable feeling in your throat.
Cigarette hangover.
That's what takes the joy out of smoking. And when that happens to you, it's time to switch to Philip Morris. Remember,
over 2 million more smokers have switched to Philip Morris.
Yes, if you're tired of cigarette hangover, join the millions who have discovered in Philip Morris a milder smoke, a cleaner, fresher smoke than they've ever known before.
Over 2 million more smokers have switched to Philip Morris.
Remember, Philip Morris is the one, the only cigarette proved definitely less irritating, proved definitely milder than any other leading brand. No other cigarette can make that statement.
Remember, top-ranking doctors, eminent nose and throat specialists, actually suggest Philip Morris in cases of irritation due to smoking.
Above all, remember this. You'll be glad tomorrow you smoke Philip Morris today.
This is Elliot Lewis. I sincerely believe that the Philip Morris Playhouse made a wonderful contribution to the literature of the best radio plays by producing tonight's show by David Ellis. And I was honored in being invited to appear in it. May I thank Philip Morris for the opportunity, and may I thank my friends and colleagues who appeared with me.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. And may I present you with this carton of Philip Morris cigarettes. And I hope you'll be among our listeners next Friday evening when the spotlight will be on Donald O'Connor.
I will, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Lewis. This is Johnny again reminding you, if you're tired of cigarette hangover, call for the one cigarette that gives you a milder, fresher, cleaner smoke. Yes,
Now goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Donald O'Connor. Until then... Take a number from 1 to 10.
I'll take 5.
That's the winner. That's Revelation, a blend of 5 great tobaccos cut 5 different ways. Revelation is a great pipe tobacco that's smooth, burning, fragrant. Only 15 cents for the pocket tin. Revelation.
Music on the Philip Morris Playhouse is under the direction of Lud Gluskin. All names and characters used on this program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This is Art Ballinger saying goodnight for Philip Morris. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Procter & Gamble's Tide washes dishes cleaner than any soap. No scum in the water, no cloudy film. Dishes and glassware simply sparkle. Try Tide. This is KNX Los Angeles.
Henley Laboratories presents The Doctor Fights, starring Lieutenant Commander Robert Montgomery, United States Naval Reserve, in a thrilling true story of a doctor in World War II. The Doctor Fights, starring Robert Montgomery.
Eternal Providence has appointed me to watch over the life and death of all thy creatures. May I always see in the patient a fellow creature in pain. Grant me strength and opportunity always to extend the domain of my craft.
Is the prayer of every doctor. It is ages old, and yet today it is as new as the heroism of tomorrow's battle. This is a doctor at war. Shenley Laboratories voiced the wish of all America that victory in the Pacific soon will be ours. When that day comes, this war will end for most of the men fighting today. But for some of those now serving on the battlefronts, their fight will never end. These men are America's physicians, for whom the battle against disease goes on endlessly. No development in recent medical history has given the doctor such aid in his fight, both in war and civilian use, as penicillin. The story of how this drug, so difficult to prepare in quantity, was first produced in sufficient amount for the Army and Navy, and then finally in quantity enough for most civilian needs, is a tribute to the 22 great industrial companies who turned their facilities to the demanding task of penicillin production. Shenley Laboratories is indeed proud to have been among those firms permitted to produce penicillin. Tonight, Mare Island and Back is the true story of Captain Henry H. Kessler, the man who has done so much to return seriously wounded men to a normal, happy life. We will meet Captain Kessler in person later in our program. And now, The Doctor Fights, starring Robert Montgomery.
Now hear this, you blessed ones, you lucky ones sitting in your bedrooms with 10 pink toenails to clip. And you in your kitchens opening a bottle with 2 living hands, now hear this. And you especially who sit by the loudspeakers and smoke, having but recently learned how to open a pack of cigarettes with 1 hand, hear this. Hear this.
This is Sam Logan's story. Captain Sam Logan, United States Marines. He was feeling good that morning. Plenty of sky over Guadalcanal, and the smoke of the guns didn't come up this high. Might have been Florida below. It was so clean up here. And the clouds washed his wings as he banked left to circle the island. This was the life. This was the joy of it. This was Sam Logan's life, the beginning and the end of it. To wish for a cloud and be there. To yearn for higher air and climate on the hot back of an engine. Leveling off now, he dipped a wing to the boys below to show them he was there with his big hand over them. And then he saw the sun and saw the speck on it and grinned like a boy. And the clouds moved under to make a floor he could fight on. It came like a black stone, growing, sprouting wings now, firing now, the sun like a mirror shining in his eyes. Something went past. He banked hard right, the strong right leg on the pedal. Hatch opened hard with the wind sucking. Horizon over his left ear now. The wind on his head like a hammer as he stands on his seat and walks out and slides down the sky. One, two, three, four. Sam Logan gripped the steel handle of his chest. Eight, nine. His shoulders jerked and he grinned again. Far below, he saw the sea between his legs like a great pillow. And then it came. The Zero turning back, nosing up toward him, the sun flashing like water on the prop. Angry, squirming upward like a snake. Sam Logan hung from his parachute, and the Japanese pilot, husbanding his Imperial cartridges, performed a successful but unnecessary amputation 2,000 feet above the sea. And Sam Logan's right leg flew in a high and bloody arc and followed him down, while the Zero, propeller dripping, move northward toward Japan.
Well, that's tough, but consider yourself lucky, Logan.
Yeah?
Sure. Take little Henry here. I wasn't even supposed to be out here. I had too many independents. Wife and two kids. Had it all figured. I'm safe.
All right, so I'm in.
I figure, well, I get myself in the band. No violins allowed. Quartermaster. Ain't fat enough. Air corps. Too fat. Landing barges? Just right. When we get back in the States, I'm going to get up in the morning, my kids tie my shoes, my wife puts on my hat, and I go sell my apples. Toss you for the intersection of 42nd and Broadway, Logan. Or are you going to corner the Macintosh market?
That doctor said he'd put a hand on you, didn't he?
You can't tie your shoes with a hook. What are you going to do? Give it any thought?
I don't know. I want to see that doctor. What's his name? Kessler?
Ain't nice, that doctor, but he can't grow you nothing you can put a shoe on.
Well, at least we only got one missing, Luke.
Yeah, which just about puts me right behind the eight ball. Man, I heard the way you lost your that shoe.
I didn't lose it. I gave it.
Yeah? Well, whatever you did, you ain't got it, bud.
What'd you do, Luke? Farmer?
Yeah, that's all I ever did. And there ain't no corner to sell apples on in Clay County.
I heard those artificial legs are pretty good the way they got them down.
Yeah, but I ain't pitching no artificial hay. And I ain't plowing no artificial ground, neither. It's tough enough with two legs. I just hope to God they never let me out of this hospital. That's all I hope.
Here's Dr. Kessler, Logan.
Morning, boys.
Morning, Doctor.
Hot in here, isn't it? Yeah, that's better. Some of that new Hebrides ozone. Why didn't you open that window next to your chair, Henry?
I can't open that window. Needs two hands.
It'll open with one and a half. Try it. Let's see it, Henry.
There it is. What there is of it.
Oh, it looks nice.
Pretty.
Could have been worse, Henry.
I know. Every morning I thank God it wasn't my head.
What head? Henry, when you get back to the States, they'll do a fancy operation on you. Fix you up with a hand that you can open and close just by thinking. You won't have to move your shoulders to operate it. It works right off your own muscles. No, all you have to do is to learn how to think.
That's great, Doctor.
Now, look here.
I appreciate it, Doctor, but you don't have to kid me. I'm a truck driver. 10-ton max. How am I going to drive a truck with a tin hand?
You can do it with a tin hand, but you can't do it with a tin brain.
I appreciate it, Doctor. But I ain't kidding myself.
Okay. It's your funeral. Luke, take that cover off. Let me see the leg.
It don't hurt anymore, sir. Hardly.
Well, no reason why it should. Yeah. Looks fine. Cover up. Tell me, boy, you got the farm waiting for you back home, haven't you?
I can't go back to that farm, sir. They can't afford to feed me.
Why, you tired of working?
Oh, no, sir, but I can't...
I'll talk to you about it later. Let's see it, Logan.
Feels peculiar.
Raise it.
Feels funny. How's it look?
All right. Cover up. Move over. Let me sit on your bed.
How am I doing? Is it healing, sir?
Yes, coming together in great shape. I've been wanting to talk to you, Logan. What are your plans?
Plans for what?
They'll fit you with an artificial leg back in the States. The thing I'm interested in is the kind of work that you want to do. Maybe you can get started on it in the hospital by the time you're a civilian.
Oh, well. I'm going to fly, sir.
You're going to fly?
That's right.
Pretty damn nice way of taking it, Logan. I'm glad you feel that way.
How long will it take for me to get a leg?
Oh, a few months. You'll have plenty of time to get used to it, and then, I don't know, maybe a commercial line will give you a chance.
Well, I'm not interested in commercial flying. I'm going back into combat.
I see. Did you, you ever know anybody with an artificial leg?
No, but I know what you mean, sir, but it doesn't apply to me. I'll be able to walk, won't I?
Definitely.
Well, if I walk, I can fly. If I can fly, I can fly combat.
All right. I don't think it's ever been done in this man's Navy, but who knows? Maybe nobody tried. I'll see you later, Logan. See you later, boys. That was Sam Logan. Of course, he'd never fly, certainly not for Navy combat. In the beginning, I berated myself for not telling him the truth, and every day I made up my mind to tell him. But it kept getting harder and harder. I'd come into the ward, and he'd be smiling up at me with that kid grin on his face, and whenever we'd talk...
You know, when I get a plane, Doctor, I'm going to take you up and turn you over so many times you'll think you drank a gallon of high octane. I'll show you a power dive like you never...
And another time... When we were alone.
I was just reading about these jet propulsion jobs. Man, that's for me. They'll never touch us in those babies. 700...
One day I went out to the field that was a few miles from the hospital. I knew a major there. We were old friends.
That's right, Captain. This is the kind of fighter he was flying.
Yeah, well, I'd like to look in the cockpit.
Well, here, step right up. There you are. Now hoist in. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to feel the... These pedals. How far does this pedal go?
Oh, go ahead and press it.
Uh-huh. Major, I want your opinion. What would you say to a man flying one of these in combat with one artificial leg?
Impossible.
Now, wait a minute. He's got the action of his knee. It's just from the knee down.
Couldn't do it. I doubt that he'll fly, and he'd certainly never make combat.
He's a remarkable kid, Major. He's all guts.
That wouldn't help, Captain. I'm not a doctor. I'm a flyer. But I don't believe that a man is ever going to time the use of an artificial leg so that he can go into combat and come out alive. That leg's got to respond, Captain. A man's got to act on the split tail of a
second. Is there any rule against it that you know of?
Well, there isn't any rule against a blind man flying either. But we don't give them airplanes.
But there's no rule.
No. No, but it just won't work. I wouldn't let him kid himself, Captain. He's got all the flying medals he's ever going to get.
Hee-yah, get your Macintoshes all red, all right. Five apiece, help the veteran, hee-yah. How's that, Fetter Logan?
Great. Henry, why don't you shut up?
What do you mean? Dr. Kessler says you should practice up on what you're going to be in life. I'm doing my occupational therapy.
We're going back to the States today. Buck up, old boy. Free ocean cruise.
You know, Luke, I think his mother must have been thinking of Santa Claus.
Boy, I sure hope they don't put me out of the hospital. That's all I hope.
Hello, Doctor. When are we leaving?
Hi. About an hour. Get out of here, will you, boys? I want to talk to Logan. Go ahead, Henry. Give Luke a push.
Yeah. Hey, don't you think we make a great pair, Doctor? He could carry the pencils and the tin cup, and I push him.
You're breaking my heart. Get out of here. You're going to Mare Island Hospital, Logan, California.
Swell. I heard about that place.
I won't be with you for a while, so I want to tell you a few things. First of all, I'm not sure that you'll ever fly again.
No, sir, I've got to fly.
Wait a minute now. You see, Luke and Henry here, they've made up their minds that they can't do anything. That's a bad attitude, obviously. But it's just as bad for a man to think that he can do everything.
If I can't fly, I might as well be dead.
Now, you cut that
out. No, sir, that's the way I feel. I was just getting hot. I was just getting good.
Tell me this. Before you started to think about flying, what were you interested in?
Nothing.
Oh, come on now.
When I was 6 or 7 years old, my dad drove us out to the flying field. You know, where they took you up for a dollar? Well, when I saw one of those planes go up, that's when I knew. And I never changed. Not for 5 minutes.
Good enough. Now, listen to me. Supposing I were God, God of the Navy and the Marines.
Would you have trouble?
Oh, you said it. But just supposing I had the power to put you in a plane and send you into combat, and you got in and took off, and after 5 minutes in the air, you realized that you couldn't make it. You came down, and... You see what I mean? I want you to have something to fall back on, an ace in the hole.
I realize what you're saying, sir.
I don't want you to think that it's completely out.
I know what you want me to think. I'd just like to tell you something, sir. You deal with hundreds of crippled men every week. And maybe after a while, you begin to look at them as though they felt crippled.
What do you mean?
I sit here looking out of this window, and I see the sky, and I see the planes going over, and I feel like Sam Logan, that's all. The same way I ever felt when I saw planes flying. I look different, but I feel the same. And I hope to God they're going to treat me in the States the way I feel, not the way I look.
You think I've treated you that way?
You've been all right, but I still don't think you realize what a man can do if he's got to do it.
You know, it's funny. Ever since I became a surgeon, I've been trying to make patients understand just that.
Then you believe that I can fly combat again? You do, don't you?
Officially? No. Medically? No. But, well, I'm an official and I'm a medic. So, good luck to you, Sam.
I'll be back, and when I fly over here, I'll buzz you at 50 feet.
You do that, boy. Goodbye. It doesn't happen this way very often, but it did this time. Sam Logan left the Hebrides with Henry and Luke, and a little while later I followed. When I saw the lovely coast and the boys crowding the rail, I caught the longing in their eyes. I remembered Sam Logan's eyes, and as we docked, I felt that I must either do something that was impossible, or Logan was going to have to do it. And that's how it was when I sat with him and the boys in the warm Mare Island sun.
Am I glad to see you, Doctor? They got me marked nuts around here.
Good judge is a character. Let me see that leg.
Yeah. I bumped into a captain I knew in the Pacific, and he says any time I want, I can come out to the field and he'll give me a plane to take up.
You don't say.
Yeah. I got Henry and Luke working for me, too. Henry's... Here he comes now. Hey, Henry! Yeah. Come over here.
Yeah.
There's Luke, too. Luke, come here.
Hello, Doctor. Hi. How are you doing, huh?
Hey, Doctor, I was just talking to a nurse.
Oh, Doctor.
Pull up, Luke.
This nurse has got an uncle who worked in the Admiral's office, and she's going to tell him to put in a word for Sammy here to get a plane when he's ready.
Only thing, she says you got to put the okay on him first.
Well, you're paying these fellas, Logan.
I promised to name my plane Henry and Luke.
And when I get a Mac again, I'm going to paint Sammy over the radiator.
When did you change your mind about truck driving?
Huh? I didn't change my mind. I just figured if Sam can fly an aeroplane with one leg, I can drive a truck with a tin hand anyhow. I mean, he ain't that good.
Well, they're both crazy, Doctor. Why don't you tell them what's going on?
How about you, Luke? You make any arrangements at home?
Well, my old man keeps writing when I'm coming. But I discourage him. Man that eats and don't work, people ain't going to like him after a while. And I ain't going to get myself into none of that.
How about it, Doctor, huh? We get another operation, don't we?
Well, here's the story. You got a lot of work on your arm, Henry, and we'll start right away. There's just one more surgery for you, Sam, and another session for you, Luke. When I get you all fitted up, we'll start walking. Up and down stairs, climb some ladders. Put you in a car, Henry, and start you driving. Maybe some horseback riding and so on. And while this is all going on, Sam, I want you to do some thinking about your future. I understand there's a lot of good jobs in the local aircraft plant.
No, sir, I'm going to follow.
I'll do the best job I know how to do, Sam. You'll be able to do anything that you want to do in civilian life, and there'll be plenty of jobs in the Marines for you.
Sharpening pencils, you mean?
I mean, there'll be plenty of jobs. Now, you think about it.
You didn't say this in the Hebrides, Doctor.
I hoped you'd come to realize it yourself. I can only make you walk. I can't think for you, Sam, and you're not thinking.
Oh, no. He thinks all the time, Doctor.
They're working over Tokyo day and night. It'll be over soon. I didn't finish what I was supposed to do. I got to finish. I want to finish it.
Don't you see how impossible it is? Even with bad teeth, a man can't get into the Air Force. How in the world...
I don't care. I got to do it.
He's got very good teeth, Doctor.
Oh. Well, I'll operate this afternoon. You'll be ready at 4 o'clock. In time, Sam Logan was walking, and so was Luke. And Henry was picking up magazines with his new hand. It's no good to put romance into this. It's not right to forget the sadness in this. But they were walking. And Henry was tying his shoes. In fact, he was going around tying everybody's shoes who would let him. And I noticed he forgot about the apple business. And then the thing happened. The thing that always happens.
Hey, Sam, give me a hand here. Hey, Luke, come on. Get up.
Come on, Buttertoes, get up. What, are you lazy again?
I can't do it.
Oh, Baloney, you're just lazy again. Up. Come on, up.
Yeah, that's it. There, sit a minute. Yeah. That's it. Ah, sit down, Luke. What are you trying to pick up cigarette butts for?
Cut out. Let me alone, will you?
Come on, Luke, we're going for a walk.
I ain't walking no more. Staying right here. I ain't getting up again.
We're going horseback riding next week. You got to get in trim.
I ain't getting in no trim here. Ain't gonna make no damn fool out of me. I'm sitting here. And I'm gonna keep right on sitting here.
You know what you're gonna do? You're going to disgrace Dr. Kessler. Look at that nice work he did. You wanna go and disgrace the doctor? Oh, Logan. Come on, open your eyes. Open your eyes. Get on your feet. Sam, you talk. Sam. Where did he go now?
Oh, there you are, boys. I'd like to talk to you.
Ah,
what's on your mind, Doctor?
Well, I was planning some things for the three of you next week. You feel up to it?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Boy, look at that plane. That's the same plane I was flying. Look at her tear. Look at her. Heading west, too. When am I going to fly, Doctor?
You want to get yourself killed? Sam, you crazy.
Doctor, please. Give me a chance. One chance. Get me into a training plane, anything. I'll tell you if I can't do it. I swear I'll tell you.
All right, Sam.
Doctor, you're not kidding now.
I have a light plastic leg I want to fit you with first. Then you'll get used to that and we'll see what we can do. I'm not guaranteeing the Navy is going to give you a plane now.
But you'll tell them I can fly.
I can only tell them what I know, boy. I know that you want to fly. And I don't know any reason why you shouldn't. The rest is up to them.
Hey, and when do I get a car to drive, Doctor?
I'll let you know when you're ready, Henry. Well, what do you say, Luke?
I'll wait, Doctor. I'll just wait.
All set, sir. Sorry you can't come along.
Well, I'd just like to stick my head in for a minute, Lieutenant.
I'll get right up on the wing, sir.
Oh, thanks. I got it. It's all yours now, Sam. How's the leg feel?
Just like my own. Don't worry about anything, Doctor. I'll be all right. Say, Doctor.
Yeah?
I never thanked you for everything. I'd like to thank you.
One look at that puss of yours now is enough for me. Let's see you fly, Sam.
Step aside, mister.
And remember, fly over the hospital. The boys will all be out watching for you.
I'll be there in 5 minutes.
Make way.
I have three letters now. One is from New York. Part of it says, I knew I'd get mixed up with apples one way or another. I'm delivering them from upstate in a 10-ton Mack. The hand steers fine. You were right. All I gotta do is think, and it opens and closes. And I know how to think now. Any news from Sam, the flying man? Signed, Henry. The second is from Clay County. My son Luke, it says, is out hoeing now, so I'm taking this opportunity to say that he still feels embarrassed about the trouble he was to you, but is fine and works good. Keeps wondering about a boy name of Logan, and his mother and myself are wondering how he made out finally. Our thanks to you for Luke. And the third letter is from somewhere in the Pacific. Just a quick one, it says, to let you know I am now Major Logan. Hope you're still at Mare Island when I get back, because you're not getting out of that ride I promised you. Button up, Doctor, I'm coming. And the way it looks out here, it'll be soon. P.S. I wrote your name on the leg, just in case I start forgetting who put me back in the clouds. It's signed, Sam. Ladies and gentlemen, from San Francisco, we now present Captain Henry H. Kessler himself, director of the Rehabilitation Division of the Naval Hospital at Mare Island. Dr. Kessler will be interviewed by Grant Holcomb.
You must have many stories, Captain Kessler, as inspiring and courageous as that of Major Logan.
Yes, Grant. The story of Sam Logan is one of my favorites. But there are thousands of others just as good. As a matter of fact, Bob Montgomery and I used to swap a lot of mighty fine stories down there in the New Hebrides.
You know Commander Montgomery, who portrayed you this evening?
Indeed I do. We've spent many an evening visiting in my hut when his cruiser was down in that part of the world. I've gotten quite a chuckle out of sitting here tonight, listening to Bob play me.
I know he's felt it a privilege to do it, Captain Kessler, because he's had an opportunity to see your work at first hand. Now, at just what point do you feel the actual rehabilitation of an amputee should begin?
At the very moment he's hit. That would be the ideal thing. But of course, we know that isn't possible. By the time the boys reach us at Mare Island, they have had their preliminary surgical treatment and also a chance to do a lot of thinking and worrying.
What worries them most?
First of all, they wonder how their wives and sweethearts are going to be affected by their disability. They want to know how their communities will receive them and whether or not they are going to be able to take care of themselves and earn a living.
You can reassure them on all those scores?
Yes, Grant. We do everything possible to help them. And before the patient leaves the hospital, he must be able to dress and undress, feed and shave himself, lock and unlock doors, drive, swim, dance, write, handle a telephone, earn a living. In other words, be a completely self-sufficient person.
That's more than some of them could do before the war.
That's very true. We have found that a majority of our patients did not go beyond the 11th grade in school. Many were in unskilled occupations. We want to do more than restore these men to blind alley jobs, especially now that they are older and somewhat changed by their experiences. Our aim is to use the valuable time of convalescence for education and training, for giving them a chance to find the work they really like and are interested in doing, and then seeing that they return to civilian living better equipped than they ever were to take their place in social and business life.
Thank you, Captain Kessler. And it's easy to see why it gives the boys new hope just to know that they're being routed to you at Mare Island for their new arms and legs and their new start in life.
This is Bob Montgomery. Thank you, Captain Kessler, for the privilege of taking a part which rightfully belongs to you. You know, I've been hoping that we could take up spinning those yarns we started out in the Hebrides, and it looks as if we're going to be able to. I'll be in San Francisco the latter part of the week, and I'll give you a call at Mare Island. See you later, Doctor, and good luck.
Shenley Laboratories, maker of penicillin Shenley, dedicates this program to the 180,000 doctors of our country, 60,000 of whom are with the armed forces, 120,000 of whom are maintaining the health of all of us at home. In closing, Shenley Laboratories leaves you with this thought. In the peace to come, an important part of Shenley policy will be a continuing program of research. Even now, in the same spirit of experimentation which made possible Shenley's participation in the penicillin program, Shenley scientists are at work on new products, new developments, which ultimately may benefit all mankind. This is James Wallington reminding you that Shenley Laboratories will present The Doctor Fights, starring one of Hollywood's finest actors, Robert Young, in a thrilling true story, Rescue to the Moon, next week at this same time over these same stations. Tonight's Doctor Fights was written by Arthur Miller with music by Leith Stevens. It was produced and directed by D. Engelbach. We've promised our fighting men overwhelming superiority in weapons and equipment. We've spared nothing to give them this superiority. We'll spare nothing to keep giving this to them until final victory is won. We must all help pay for the tools of victory by investing every available dollar in fighting war bonds now. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from this show, Philip Morris Playhouse, maybe more from the Doctor Fights, I'm not sure we've heard that before, and thousands of other old-time radio shows at the website, relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is there, and you can donate through the website as well if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. If you're able to help out, please do. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thank you for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.